Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. It's June 15th, 2020, live to be rebroadcast June 17th, 2020 on 91.7 FM WHUS. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. While the UConn Student Union is closed, we are broadcasting live on Mondays at 10 o'clock a.m. on Facebook Live. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. All right. So the latest stuff on the coronavirus. So a couple things. One of the things that's concerning is, once again, I just want to put out there that there are going to be people who are in different places than you are in terms of opening up. And there are going to be people who are eager to go gather in groups. There are going to be people who get close to you not wearing a mask. There are going to be times when you are not wearing a mask and somebody stands back from you. So you have to be thinking about all of those. And one of the things I want to say is be kind. If somebody is not in a place where you are in terms of their comfort level, in terms of going out or being in groups or riding on bike rides or wherever they are, just be kind to them. Understand that if somebody is ahead of you in terms of what they're willing to tolerate, let it go and take care of yourself and step back. And if you get pressured by somebody, then step away from those people. If you feel like somebody's doing something that's not at your comfort level, it's okay. You don't have to go off on them. You don't have to yell at them. You can just explain that that you're not comfortable with doing that thing and wish them well, and you don't have to fight about it. So there was something that came out this week about there was a statement that came out by the World Health Organization that you can't, that spread of asymptomatic, that there isn't really good evidence of asymptomatic spread of, quote, COVID-19. So that if you're asymptomatic, you can't really spread it. And therefore, all of the distancing doesn't really make a difference, and that it's possible that it's not necessary to wear masks. So a lot of people interpreted that it's not necessary to wear masks because asymptomatic spread isn't really a thing. And then the WHO backpedaled on that. That the top World Health Organization officials clarified on Tuesday that scientists have not determined yet how frequently people with asymptomatic cases of COVID-19 pass the disease to others, a day after suggesting that such spread is very rare. So they had to make a clarification because the WHO's original comments incited strong pushback from outside public health experts. So some people interpreted it as that they made a big mistake, that you can spread it asymptomatically. And the other side of that is that people said, oh, you see that? You know, all of these measures are not necessary. We don't need to be wearing masks. It's all that we're being unnecessarily made to be afraid. So they did backpedal. So Maria Van Kerkhove, who's the WHO's technical lead on the COVID-19 pandemic, made it clear Tuesday that the actual rates of asymptomatic transmission aren't yet known. So the majority of transmission we know about is that people who have symptoms transmit the virus to other people through infectious droplets, Van Kerkhove said. But there are a subset of people who don't develop symptoms, and to truly understand how many people don't have symptoms, we don't have that answer yet. So it came at a question and answer session, and it boiled down to the details of what an asymptomatic infection actually is and different ways the term is used. While some cases of COVID-19 are absolutely asymptomatic, that means you test positive for the virus and you have absolutely no symptoms. You don't have a sore throat. You don't have a fever. You don't have any trouble with breathing. You don't have digestive upset. You have absolutely no symptoms at all, and you never get symptoms. That happens. Asymptomatic can also mean that you are incubating and you've had the virus for 5 days, and on day six, you're going to get symptoms. So you don't know whether people are asymptomatic or presymptomatic. You don't know which one, which to me says, wear the mask. Okay. So it came across as if the WHO was suggesting that people without symptoms weren't driving spread. And some studies, however, estimated that people without symptoms, whether they're asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic, could be responsible for up to half the spread, which is why the virus has been so difficult to contain. Isolating people who are sick does not prevent the possibility that they already passed the virus to others. So it's a big it's a big bunch of confusion. So there was a lot of confusion when all the best evidence suggests that people without symptoms can and do readily spread SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. So you have to assume that if people have the virus, it is possible that they can spread it. So they want to determine which routes of transmission are driving most of the spread of the virus so they can figure out how to, you know, how to keep it back and isolate people when necessary. We're not going to stop all transmission, but what we do, we suppress transmission. That's the best you can hope for. There are other unknowns. They don't know how they're spreading the virus, how people who are asymptomatic are spreading the virus if they're not coughing. That they may still be expelling infectious droplets through singing, yelling, or even talking. And we have a feeling that that's what's going on. I mean, not a feeling, but there's evidence for that because we know that, for example, people catch the virus when they're in very large groups, when they're at church, when they're singing together. We know there was a choir where there was at least one person who was infected, and then most of the choir got sick. So when you're doing a lot of sustained breathing and forced talking and you're around people, that is a way that spread can happen. So you don't necessarily have to be symptomatic. If you have the virus in your respiratory tract, you can breathe it out. Based on what's been seen so far, asymptomatic people tend to be younger and not have other health issues. But that's not necessarily true. You can have older people who are asymptomatic and you have younger people who get sick. So that asymptomatically infected individuals are much less likely to transmit the virus. But that doesn't mean that they're not going to. And again, you don't know if a person is asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic. So somebody who has virus in their respiratory tract can breathe it on you. And if there is a sustained conversation and sustained activity without masks and you're close together, you can get sick. You're going to be less likely to get sick if you're both wearing masks, and even less so if you're far apart, and even less so if you're not together at all. There was an article that came out. There were a couple of women, a couple of hairstylists in Missouri who were found to be COVID positive, and they were working, that they were seeing people in their salon, and they were found to be symptomatic, and they were both masked. They were wearing the proper PPE and nobody got sick. So some people might interpret that to mean, oh, we're taking too many precautions. It's not necessary to be so cautious. The way that I interpret it is that masks work. So if those two stylists were able to see, they saw over 150 people and not one of them got sick. So what that says to me, of course, that's one study and it's not a double-blind placebo-controlled study, but that is, to me, is some anecdotal, anyway, evidence that wearing masks works. Because when you're a hairstylist, you're standing very close to your client. You're obviously not 6 feet away. You may be 6 feet away from the next chair, but you're not 6 feet away from your client. And these women were wearing masks and they did not transmit the virus. So that's exciting news. That means wearing a mask is a good idea. And I'm going to be wearing a mask for the foreseeable future until we know we're safe from the pandemic, whether there's a vaccination or whatever decision I make. But in situations where it's likely to have spread, I'm going to be wearing masks. I'm going to be wearing masks when I fly in planes, and during the pandemic, if I'm in any kind of a group or in a setting where there's a lot of people, I'm going to be wearing a mask. So I think it's a good idea to do that as well for anyone. So, all right. So that's our latest on the coronavirus. So let's talk about some stuff that's not the coronavirus. Okay. So I want to go back to talking about some sunscreen. So here's the deals with sunscreen. So first of all, should you wear sunscreen at all? My thought is yes. And getting a little bit of sun without getting sunburned is a good idea. And you have to figure out what that is for you. So depending on your skin tone and depending on your inflammatory capacity, you may get sunburned faster than other people. People vary in their rate that, at which they get sunburned. And it's not a good idea to get sunburned because then you have oxidative damage to your skin and you do increase your risk of getting skin cancer. So if you're going to be outside for any length of time, and again, you have to figure out what the length of time is for you to get a sunburn. And a good rule of thumb is if you're going to be outside for more than 10 or 15 minutes, wear sunscreen. It's a good idea. So sunscreen should have ingredients like zinc oxide and titanium dioxide. You don't want to have the benzones, oxybenzone and avobenzone. There is some concern that they can increase your cancer risk. So zinc oxide and titanium dioxide are reflective. They don't get into your skin and change anything. They just they just sit on top of your skin and they act like little mirrors and they reflect the sun's rays off your skin. They're also reef safe. They don't damage coral reefs. They're not yet found to be harmful to coral reefs. And that's important if you're wearing sunscreen in the ocean. Especially if you're in the ocean, like you're in the Gulf, like I go to, and if you're in the Gulf of Mexico and you're near coral reefs. So sunscreen can also have nice moisturizing ingredients like shea butter, aloe, hyaluronic acid, ceramides, glycerin. So things that help to nourish and moisturize your skin. It's also a good idea to use at least SPF 30, that's sun protection factor of 30, and reapply every 1 to 2 hours, depending on how much you've been sweating and getting in and out of the water. So sweat will disperse, or, you know, it will, you'll lose your sunscreen. And if you're splashing about in the water, you'll lose your sunscreen too. So you should reapply it. So now there are some foods that you can eat that can help to prevent sunburn. And so that's kind of an interesting thing. So how would that happen? Basically, it happens, there's a couple ways, because they provide antioxidant help, and also they color your fat. So when you have, when you eat stuff with a lot of carotenoids in it, your fat turns orange, and you see people, I mean, I've done this. When I was in school, we had gross anatomy lab, and we had to dissect cadavers. And when you looked at the cadaver's fat, some of the cadavers had very orange fat. And that's kind of a good thing because that means they ate a lot of fruits and vegetables. If you look at the palms of your hands and they're a moderate shade of orange, that means that you're getting a good deal of carotenoids in your diet. And if Ron and I look at the palms of our hands, we're a little on the orange side because we eat greens just about every day. And there's lots of carotenoids in greens, you know. So leafy greens, they don't look orange or yellow because they're covered in chlorophyll. But if you let them sit out, they won't manufacture chlorophyll anymore. And most of your greens will turn yellow. And that's lutein and zeaxanthin. Those are carotenoids. Yeah. So that will turn your fat orangey yellow, and you can't see it so much in your skin, but you can see it in the palms of your hands because you don't have a lot of melanin in the palms of your hands. Yeah. Yours are a little on the orange side. The Department of Dermatology in Beijing found that while sunscreen's effective at protecting against UVB rays, the ones that cause the burning sensation, sunscreens don't protect against UVA wavelengths. Those are the ones that wrinkle your smooth skin. But like so many other health-saving things, that you can help to protect that from foods. So there are at least 7 foods that can help to protect you from sun damage and sunburn. And they help to protect you from that ultraviolet A. So that's very nice. So red wine is one of them. That doesn't mean drink half a bottle during the night, especially during the coronavirus pandemic, okay? But the flavonoids in red wine, especially the resveratrol, can help to protect you from sunburn. And so it can help to protect you from melanoma also. So because of the high antioxidants. And I would also say that that's true. That's going to be true of grape juice too. You're going to be able to get resveratrol and flavonoids from grape juice and eating grapes. So flavonoids prevent the skin from forming reactive oxygen species. And according to the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry, those molecules exert a variety of harmful effects by altering cellular functions that result in cell death. Sweet potatoes. We forgot to eat our sweet potato last night.
Yeah, we did.
So we can have it. Do I have it tonight? Have it tonight.
Well, we'll have it some night.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you know that when you're dehydrated, did you know you crave sweets? So you can consider eating a sweet potato when you're craving sweets. And it tastes really good, of course, and it has a lot of beta-carotene, beta-carotene is a carotenoid, and it's converted by your body to vitamin A. Beta-carotene is only in plants, whereas vitamin A you'll find in animal foods. And so beta-carotene is crucial to if you get enough of it, you need to get that to get your proportions of antioxidants on board. And the carotenoids help as a defense shield against the sun. Like I said, that's what you see when you see that orangey tone in your skin. The next one is olive oil. So when you eat olive oil, it's a natural sun blocker too. There's squalane. Yeah, because there's squalane in olive oil. And when you eat squalane, there's squalane. Sometimes you'll see squalane as an ingredient in skin products too. So if that's in your moisturizer, that's a great protector of your skin's fats. So when you eat the squalane, remember you keep saying olive oil skin. It does help to keep your skin smooth. And what's olive oil? Italian lady secret. They use it and they just use it as a moisturizer.
Right.
You can use olive oil as a dressing. I mean, we just drizzle olive oil on our salads every night. So, and if you're not big on putting olive oil on your dressing, I tell some people, because olive oil is so helpful for so many other things. Olive oil has monounsaturated fats in it. As we said, it's really good for your skin. And it has some antiviral properties as well. It also can raise your HDL and increase the size of your LDL. So HDL is your high density lipoprotein. That's the lipoprotein in your blood that takes cholesterol from your general circulation and takes it back to your liver for use. And so when you consume a lot of olive oil, it will increase your HDL. It can help to increase your HDL. I will tell people to just take a tablespoon by mouth a day. If they want to have extra on their salad or whatever, they can do that. But if they just eat a tablespoon, then they're sure they're getting it in. The other thing about olive oil is you want to make sure that you're getting a brand that really is 100% olive oil. So I'm not going to promote brands right now, but you can look that up, that there are certain brands that are definitely 100% olive oil, because olive oil can often be cut with cheaper oils. It's a way to bring the price down, but it's not good for you and it's not going to have the same benefits. And the cheaper oils that are in it may not be good for you. So, all right, strawberries. It's that time of year. I have to really think about it to try to say strawberries. Yes. I tend to say strawberries.
Strawberries.
Yeah, yes.
There's some R's in there.
Yes, in Philadelphia, in Greater Philly, there's an H in the word strawberry. Why? I thought that I had a bad habit or a speech impediment because I say street and strawberry and straight. And I had no idea until like a year ago, I found out that adding that H to your STR it's an accent. It's a greater Philadelphia thing. It's definitively a Philadelphia thing, but I grew up 40 miles from Philly. So apparently I have some Philly notes in my speech. If you listen to me talk, I sort of sound New York-ish, but if you know what to listen for, it's also kind of Trenton, Philadelphia. And Trenton is close enough to Philadelphia that the accent is similar. So strawberries, super delicious. They're starting to come in. I'm seeing people who grow strawberries around here. They're saying that the first crops are coming in. This is one of the Environmental Working Group announces as the part of the Dirty Dozen Plus. So strawberries really should be eaten organic because they do use a lot of pesticides on them. So one serving of strawberries has more vitamin C than a medium orange. So eating strawberries is really good for me. I'm going to go eat strawberries when I'm done with this show. So this is a good idea to have, it's a good way to get vitamin C. So vitamin C is really good for your skin. It's a great antioxidant as well. Vitamin C is a great free radical that can prevent a lot of skin changes. So if you get a lot of vitamin C on board, your skin's going to be nicer. All right. Avocado. This is one of our favorite things. We're eating lots of avocados.
Lots of avocados.
Yes.
Yeah.
So avocados have very absorbable vitamin E, also a great antioxidant that protects your skin against free radical damage. Avocados have a lot of vitamin E. Also great anti-aging. You get the avocado oil, more monounsaturated fats. You're protecting wrinkles from ultraviolet rays, the UVA specifically. And so avocados also are very high in fiber. They have thylakoids in them that can help you with weight loss. And one mention about vitamin E, you might think, well, what if I just take some vitamin E? Well, you have to be careful taking vitamin E. It used to be thought that if you take vitamin E, it's good to take them with mixed tocopherols. And more studies have been done recently. So first of all, you don't want to get synthetic vitamin E. So if your vitamin E bottle says on it D and L alpha tocopherol, that means it's synthetic. And synthetic vitamin E is not going to be as good for you. You may, if it says 400 IU on it, you might as well assume that it's 200 IU because the L-alpha tocopherol isn't going to be active in your body. Your body's very fussy about the very specific types of compounds that it will take on. There's something called chirality. And what that means is you can have the same compound and it can have the same exact formula, but the way it's arranged in space, it can be arranged clockwise or counterclockwise. And this doesn't really matter in a test tube, but in living systems, your living biochemical bodies prefer one chirality over the other. So vitamin E is a good example of this. And when you see vitamin E as DL alpha tocopherol, that means it is synthetic. It wasn't extracted from plants. So you want to get D alpha tocopherol, and we're letting go of the mixed tocopherols. It's now better to have vitamin E with tocotrienols in them. The tocotrienols are more protective, that you're going to get into more antioxidant issues when you have the mixed tocopherols. All these years we were telling people mixed tocopherols, and now that thinking has gone away, and now we're into the tocotrienols, which unfortunately are more expensive than the mixed tocopherols when you buy the supplement. So one way to do that, to eat avocados. Not everybody likes avocados.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love avocados.
Well, avocados are weird. Yeah. They're kind of weird. They're
a little slimy.
They're fibrous and fatty. I love them. I love the texture, and I love the way they taste. They're lovely and nutty. I think they probably have a little bit of sulfur in them too, because they have a mild, very, very slight eggy note. The thylakoids probably have anything that has thigh in it probably has a sulfur compound in it. So that may be what people don't like.
They also, if very ripe, they add a lot of moisture to your salad.
Yeah.
So
not everybody likes them. So that's okay. I mean, there are other things you can eat to get your vitamin E. But you know, some people, I'll say, why don't you try eating an avocado? And they're like, gross.
Really?
Yeah. You know, you can make avocado candy and pudding.
Okay.
You can take avocado and blend it with chocolate and make pudding out of it. We've tried it. I think we weren't.
You can make guacamole and you can make there's all sorts of great stuff you can do with that.
Yeah.
I just cut them up and throw them on the salad.
If you like it.
That way. Sometimes I'll slice off a piece of avocado and put it on a burger.
Yeah.
Which is nice there too.
Yeah, I like that too.
There's lots of
I like the combination of avocado and bacon.
And then there's the avocado and toast.
Avocado toast.
That's happening right now. Everybody's avocado toast.
I don't know if I've ever had avocado toast.
I have not.
No.
Either.
Because we usually put the avocado in we put it in salad. I have been having sourdough bread with flaxseed oil. Yeah, so that's what I've been doing. I haven't been putting avocado on it because I want to get the flaxseed oil in, because flaxseed oil has been studied to help to protect against pneumonia. And then flaxseed oil has the alpha-linolenic acid competes with binding sites for COVID. So that's how I've been getting my flaxseed oil in with the sourdough, with the flaxseed oil on it. If I don't have the bread on a given day, I might put the flaxseed oil in my applesauce.
This is part of Fran's COVID Kevlar suit.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Yes. Lots of antioxidants, lots of plants, some essential fatty acids. It's this all kind. Yes, I have an armamentarium of things. Whoa. That I'm doing to help to protect against COVID. Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm looking at this. Now this is making me hungry. I'm looking at this picture of a piece of salmon that's covered with some kind of herb on a bed of spinach with lemon, and it looks very good.
You should make me that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think tonight would be a good salmon night. Don't you?
Okay, we'll go get some.
Or trout.
Yeah, we can.
No, we have something. We can thaw. There's something. We may have to do some thawing.
We
yeah.
Thaw. Yep, we could do that too.
So, salmon, is a great fish. If it's dark pink, that means it's going to have a lot of carotenoids in it, because salmon eat plankton, and the plankton that they eat, have astaxanthin in them. And astaxanthin is a wonderful antioxidant that can help to protect you against sunburn. The omega-3 fatty acids can help to protect you too. I have had patients and friends who have issues that they get what they call sun poisoning, where they get hives from the sun. And I tell them, eat more essential fatty acids. And I've had people actually take fish oil, and it really calms down their tendency to get those hives from the sun. And eating salmon can help too. So there was actually a British study that found fish that rich in omega-3s guarded against sunburn and other changes to your DNA that can cause cancer. So that can be really helpful to you. And then there's pomegranate. Pomegranate is lovely and full of antioxidants. Although pomegranate is really, you find it in the fall. You can get pomegranate juice any time of year, but, pomegranates, they come out in the fall. That's when you can usually get them. But they have terrific antioxidants in them, and they do help to protect you from UVA, from ultraviolet A. Pomegranate also has ellagic acid in it, which is good for your cardiovascular health. And helps to strengthen your blood vessels as well. So anything that strengthens your blood vessels is going to be helpful for you in terms of your skin health in general. Circulation in general is good for skin health. So people who exercise are going to have nicer skin. And getting better circulation is going to help to protect you from sunburn too, if you're also eating a lot of good healthy food, because as you get that exercise, you're going to distribute all of the nutrients to your skin better. So that's a nice way to go. So that's the good thing. So getting your antioxidants that way. There are also supplements that can help to protect you against sunburn. One of them is green tea extract. You can drink green tea. Green tea is great for antioxidants, but if you drink a lot of it, of course, it has caffeine in it, and there may be a limit to how much caffeine you can ingest. People differ in their ability to metabolize caffeine. So if you take green tea extract that's high in EGCG, epigallocatechin gallate, that can be protective. It's a great antioxidant. You can also get, so one of the things I'll recommend sometimes is you can get sunscreen that one of the ingredients in it is green tea. You can also get lotion that has green tea in it and put it on after you've been in the sun, and it can help to heal any damage that you've done. We can't guarantee it's going to protect you from anything, but it has been studied to be helpful, to at least reduce your damage from being exposed to the sun. Then there's grapeseed extract. There was a small study of female volunteers that showed that grapeseed extract in combination with some ingredients can help to reduce the severity of sunburn. So if you take grapeseed all the time, that can be helpful. And that usually you get. I wouldn't recommend eating grapeseeds. I'd recommend taking that as an extract in a capsule. Then there's astaxanthin. Astaxanthin is what turns that. That's why flamingos. Do you know what color flamingos really are?
They're not pink.
No.
No, they're like white.
Yeah,
right?
They're white. Why are they pink?
They're pink because of what they eat. They eat
little tiny shrimps and stuff. Shrimps, yep.
And they turn pink.
That's why they have those scoopy noses, those scoopy beaks, so they can scoop out little fish and crustaceans and stuff. So the crustaceans that they eat are high in astaxanthin. So that's why flamingos are pink. So if you see a pink flamingo, that's a healthy flamingo. So you want to be a pink flamingo too. By eating your astaxanthin. So if you get, you eat salmon, you eat shrimp, you can also take astaxanthin as a supplement. And so some people who have a tendency to get sunburn, if you take astaxanthin, it can be really protective. It takes a while. So if you're planning to go on that Caribbean vacation, you want to be taking your astaxanthin for 2 to 4 weeks before you go, because you want it to build up in your fat. Mm. Right. And but it is it's a really great antioxidant for a lot of different in a lot of different ways. Back to beta carotene. You can take beta carotene as a supplement, and that will help to protect you from getting sunburn. Again, it's a great antioxidant. It will build up in your fat and protect you and create a barrier inside your fat. But it also metabolically in your body, it will help to protect you, give you and protection against free radicals. Beta carotene should be taken with mixed carotenoids. So you shouldn't be just having beta carotene. There should be alpha carotene and maybe lutein, zeaxanthin, and other carotenoids in the supplement that you take. Then there's vitamin C and E, and we talked about that before. If you take vitamin C does better if it's in mixed ascorbates, that it's not just ascorbic acid. You'll absorb it better if it's calcium ascorbate, magnesium ascorbate, potassium ascorbate, so you can get mixed ascorbates, and it can be protective. And as we said, vitamin C is a key for helping you to not have wrinkles. So it's a good thing to get on board. You can take it in supplements. You can also, like we said, eat it in foods and eat your high vitamin C foods, your strawberries, your kiwi fruit, your citrus, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, peppers. They all are high in vitamin C. People forget about kiwi fruit. Kiwi is quite high. That's why they're so sour. They're full of vitamin C. Yeah. And then back to vitamin E, that like we said, that mixed tocopherols are no longer recommended, but the tocotrienol form is. Okay, we said that already. And then fish oil, that there were actually studies that showed that when you take fish oil regularly as a supplement, it can help with protection from sunburn. They also showed you're less likely to get rashes and hive-like allergic reactions to the sun while taking fish oil. So those of you unfortunates who get that hive-like rash, when you get in the sun, you tell me you have sun poisoning. You have an allergic reaction, that you get a histamine reaction when you're exposed to too much sunlight. And that happens to some people. If you take fish oil, you can mellow that out. So that's good. All right. Now I wanted to get a little more in depth with insect repellent. When using insect repellent is important, because remember, just because there's COVID-19 doesn't mean there isn't Lyme disease,
right,
and anaplasma and ehrlichiosis and babesiosis and Bartonella and Rocky Mountain spotted fever. These are all things you can get from ticks around here. You can still get tick bites. I have patients who are coming in. They're saying, I've had a tick bite. What do I do?
I was going to say, are you seeing many cases this year?
I've seen a few already. People, calling in and saying, I got bit by a tick. What do I do? Absolutely.
Right. Okay.
Sure. We've had plenty of rain this year. The ticks love the damp. If you have long grass, unfortunately, so that's why I won't walk through those daisies too much. But we should cut some and put them in a vase. They're so pretty.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So.
We should do that.
Yeah. And soon we're going to have blackberries, which is very exciting. We have so many blackberry brambles in our backyard.
We do.
Yeah, and so we're going to have lots of blackberries. And I don't even think we're going to have to fight with the birds. Anyway.
There's plenty for everyone.
I know. So anyway, so you have... natural insect repellent is a good idea. If you're going to be going out in the woods, if you're going to go out and pick blackberries, if you're going to be working in your yard, good idea to slather yourself in insect repellent. If you have a product that has rose geranium in it, it'll help to protect you from ticks. And lemon eucalyptus seems to be the best thing for mosquitoes. The thing with lemon eucalyptus is that it has a lot of citronella oil in it. And so you can get citronella oil as well, and that can be helpful for mosquitoes. And it's not the only essential oil. Cloves, peppermint, lemongrass, basil, neem, plain eucalyptus, catnip, and thyme. All of those essential oils can be helpful to protect you against bugs. You can plant catnip, basil, and peppermint in your garden, and that can help to repel mosquitoes. That would be nice if we planted. We should plant some peppermint. You like peppermint. You like basil, too. Goodness.
I like basil.
I think maybe this will be the last year we'll be gardenless. Next year we'll have
maybe
a garden.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll have more time.
Because you have other priorities, right?
Right now I've got, ripping our house apart and putting it back together again.
I know. It's very exciting.
It is very exciting.
So you can also eat lemongrass, which has citronella in it. And it's great as a seasoning for salads, poultry, fish. And you can add lemongrass to lemonade, green, black, or herbal tea, especially if iced tea. It's very good. If you are fortunate, unlike me, that you can eat garlic and it doesn't bother your stomach, allicin. Yeah. No, it's not spelled the same way. So the garlic is an allium. That's the genus that garlic is in. Garlic and onions and chives and shallots, they're all in the allium genus. And so the compound that gives them their distinctive taste is called allicin. So garlic is very high in allicin, and the more you have, the more likely it is to work. So you have to eat it as close to raw as possible, which I can't possibly do. But if you eat garlic, that can help you to repel mosquitoes and ticks. And also, high amounts of garlic can help to kill Lyme disease.
Hmm.
So that's been studied too. Right.
Good old garlic.
Yeah. So, but I can't do it.
It also helps with social distancing.
Yes. Yes. Did we talk about that? Did we talk about that burger?
The burger?
Yes. This is funny. Here, we'll talk about this for a second.
Okay.
There was, we were listening to I can't remember if it was Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me or Ask Me Another. Anyway, we heard, that's where we heard about it. But there was in Italy, Burger King in Italy.
Oh, right. Yeah,
made a burger with ridiculous amounts of onions. It was extra. It was the extra cipolla. Like a cipolla is how you say onion. And I didn't know cipolla is a surname, an Italian surname. I didn't know that's. I should have thought of that because cebolla is onion in Spanish and cipolla is onion or cipolla is onion in Italian. And so in Italy, what they did is Burger King has made a burger where they piled on the onions. It had tons of onions on it. And it was called the social distancing burger. They added extra onions to the Whopper. Yes. And they said there's so many onions on it that nobody wanted to be around you. It's to help with social distancing.
Triple the amount of raw onions regularly put in the burger in the hopes that your stank breath will create a barrier of its own.
What does it say? Pull that down so I can see that. Yeah. Il Whopper con tripla cipolla che aiuta gli altri a starti lontano. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. There's triple the onions so that people want to stay away from you.
Who knows? Maybe Chipotle will be next on the social distancing meal train with
triple
bean burrito. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know which is worse.
A little humor in the middle of the show.
Yes. All right. So let's talk about grapefruit. I am a lover of the grapefruit. I love the grapefruit. Grapefruits have noatketone, which can repel mosquitoes and ticks. Uh-huh. And I find grapefruits to be delicious. I mean, this is not really grapefruit season, but I like grapefruit flavored things. I get grapefruit flavored, fizzy water, and I'll still eat grapefruit this time of year when I can get it. Because it's going to be transported from far away right now. I mean, the season for grapefruit in Florida, which is the closest place we can really get it from, grapefruit is available in the winter, from like January to March or April. I remember when I used to go to my parents' house, they had a grapefruit tree and the fresh grapefruits was amazing, but they would be best in March. So they're kind of done now. So if you're getting grapefruit, they're coming maybe, I don't know if they're coming from California, they're definitely coming from overseas. So You have to be careful of consuming grapefruits because grapefruit has naringin, which can slow down the functioning of phase one liver detox, which can effectively increase the dose of affected medications. Hmm. This is not an issue if you have grapefruit or grapefruit juice occasionally or one or two times a week, but don't have it daily if you're on medication that states that it's affected by grapefruit. You will hear that sometimes, that don't have grapefruit or grapefruit products if you're taking this medication. It's because grapefruit pushes down on your phase one liver detox. And so, like I said, it can effectively increase your dose of medications. You don't want that. All right. So let's talk about vitamin D. So vitamin D is interesting. So people are, you know, you want to make sure that you have adequate vitamin D in your body right now, obviously. But yet I was recommending, you know, naturopaths generally, because there are studies that promote this, they're saying that vitamin D, you want to see levels of vitamin D in your blood be around, you want to be at around 55 to 75 nanograms per milliliter. Well, there's been some studies that show that the optimal levels of vitamin D in the time of the pandemic is more like 30 to 35. And that's the idea that if you're low in vitamin D, that you're below 30, that that's an issue. You need enough vitamin D to help you with your immune system, to help to support your immune system. And so if you're below 30, you want to bring yourself up to between 30 and 35. There were some studies that showed a concern that there could be a U-shaped curve because vitamin D can increase those ACE2 receptors in your lungs, the ones that that bond the coronavirus. So you don't necessarily want to have a vitamin D level that's too high. So there's this idea that there's a U-shaped curve. There's a sweet spot that if you have a low, and by U, I mean an inverted U. So you have this level of vitamin D. That's no good. You want to have, you want your vitamin D to be up here at 30 to 35 nanograms per milliliter. And then on the other side of the curve, you, your benefits may start to decrease. We're not sure. So, but there, we have seen good outcomes with people who have a vitamin D level of between 30 and 35 nanograms per milliliter. So I'm recommending to people to back down on their vitamin D. Do take it, but back down.
So for our listeners, that's an upside down U.
Yes, that's right. Right. Inverted U. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So what you want to do is you want to have. So what dose should you take? Well, that depends. You want to take a dose that gets you to between 30 and 35 nanograms per milliliter. I'm recommending to people usually no more than 2000 IU a day, but that's going to depend. I mean, what I'm probably going to do is have you take a dose, then measure you a couple months out and see where you're at and then adjust your dose. But in general, we're telling people no more than 2000 IU a day. And sometimes it's going to be less. It just depends on the person. I'm taking a little less than 2000 IU a day myself. So again, I'm going to have to measure my dose because I'm not the best at absorbing vitamin D. So I'm probably going to have to check my levels. And so in terms of measuring, though, you don't necessarily have to measure it. That there's a suggestion there. Although I know there's some, I think my professor, Alan Gaby, he says that you don't necessarily need to measure it. On the other hand, we're in the time of COVID and we're looking at having that sweet spot, 30 to 35. So you know what? For my patients, I'm going to measure it. So if you can get your vitamin D checked, it's a good idea. All right. So flowers. Let's talk about flowers for a little bit because I like flowers. I keep looking at those daisies out there and I'm like, flowers give me so much pleasure. They make me so happy. I like to wear flower designs on my clothes, and I love to be around actual flowers. I love to go outside and look at flowers, and it doesn't matter what kind of flower it is. They all make me happy. There's little tiny ones, and there's huge, enormous ones, and there's ones in between. And remember that in You've Got Mail, Meg Ryan said that daisies were the friendliest flower, and I completely agree with her.
She thinks that daisies smile at her.
Oh, Meg
you
Ryan?
Do. No, you do.
Yeah, they
you
do.
You tell me. They're smiling. They're always smiling at me.
They are. It's not only them, and then it's butter and eggs. Butter and eggs, they laugh at me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Right. Butter and eggs is this cute little plant. If you see what butter and eggs look, you should look up what does butter and eggs look like. They really look like little scrambled eggs. They're really cute. And they're a legume. You know, legumes usually have that sort of eggy look to them, whether it's a pea or a snapdragon. I was noticing that there are a lot of wild peas out. There are a lot of legumes out. The vetch is different kinds of vetch. There's a deep purple vetch that grows, and then there's like a pink vetch that's growing right now. And there's, I think, golden banner. Yeah, there's butter and eggs, Linaria vulgaris. It's so cute. Yeah. And so it'll grow. That grows around here, too. Yeah. Butter and eggs. Very pretty. Yeah, it looks kind of like snapdragons. Because
yeah, I was going to say snapdragons.
Well, they're wild, it's like a wild snapdragon. Yeah, no, not lily. A legume. They look like legumes. Yes, they look like that's what sort of legume flowers look like. Another legume is lupin. And they grow lupins at the co-op. And lupins grow in abundance in Prince Edward Island. They plant them all along the roadsides, and they're just absolutely gorgeous. Cool. Yeah. Yes. And right now there's wild phlox growing. Anyway, so let's talk about edible flowers first.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's flowers you could eat.
Right.
Yeah. So
sometimes they end up in our greens from Brian.
Yes. Yes, they will put edible flowers in the greens. And the ones they tend to put in are the Johnny Jump Ups.
Yeah.
Which are... They're like, you know, little pansies. Yeah. All right. So there's hibiscus. Hibiscus is a great, that's a wonderful flower. It is edible and it makes a wonderful tea. And hibiscus has, it has great flavonoids in it. We were talking about the flavonoids before. It can help with your blood pressure and help with your cholesterol levels. Wonderful antioxidants. It's very bright red and it's tart. So it mixes well in a nice summer drink. It mixes well with, it goes nicely in your iced tea along with lemon. So it's very refreshing and it makes that beautiful red color. And you can eat them. You can put them in salads and just eat them. Dandelions, you know that dandelions, you can eat every part of the dandelion.
Really?
From yes, you can eat the flowers, you can eat the leaves, you can eat the roots.
They're very bitter.
They are, and they're really that bitter note that in the dandelion is very good for you.
Okay.
Yeah, because dandelion leaves are really good for your kidney health. They can be a diuretic, and whereas when you take hydrochlorothiazide, which is a drug that is a diuretic, that causes you to lose minerals. Well, when you use dandelion leaves, they have minerals to help to replace what you're losing when you're losing the water. So it really makes sense to have dandelion leaves as a diuretic. They're very nutritious. You can just eat them as a natural multivitamin. And you can also, the roots help to regulate blood sugar and help with your kidney health. And the flowers, you can actually take the flowers and put them in your salad and eat them. Mm-hmm. They're fine. And people eat dandelions all sorts of way. They eat them raw. They make jelly. They make wine. Some people bread them and fry them.
Dandelions?
Yeah.
Really?
You know.
Like the flower or the...
I'm guessing.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And of course you can make tea, you know, dandelion tea roots. You can steep them. I would boil them because they are a root.
Okay.
And they can be put into stews and casseroles. Lavender. You can eat lavender. You can have lavender tea. Lavender lemonade is wonderful. You can make lavender syrup and add it to your lemonade. It's very healing, very helpful. It's very calming. It's what we call a nervine. It's calming to the nerves. It is a mint. It's in the mint family. Has a beautiful fragrance that's very calming. And like I said, you can add it to baked goods and syrups. I love lavender in chocolate. I've had lavender chocolate before. It's really delightful. And you can use it as a spice. You can put it in fruit salad. You know, any way that it can be used in all kinds of recipes. And like I said, you can pair it with berries and citrus and rosemary. And like I said, you can pair it with chocolate.
Almost anything with chocolate. It'll taste good.
Honeysuckle. Duh. Honeysuckle is edible too.
It's yummy too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the Japanese and woodbine is the most common. They can be light yellow or white, and they can hold nectar that you can eat straight from the flower. And honeysuckle is a Chinese, it's considered a Chinese herb, used in Chinese medicine. You can apply honeysuckle flower to your skin for inflammatory conditions.
Really?
And you can make honeysuckle tea and you can make honeysuckle syrup. And again, sweeten your iced tea or lemonade with the syrup. It's really nice.
I don't see it around as much as I used to when I was growing up.
We
were down in, you know, where I grew up in Ledyard, there was a lot of honeysuckle.
Maybe
on the farm.
there's, yeah, maybe there's, maybe our conditions are not right for honeysuckle here because we have very acidic soil, so we're getting all the plants that like the acidic soil. That's why we have those ridiculous amounts of berries, and apparently those oxeye daisies like the acidic soil. And we have dandelions, or the dandelions are done, but we get dandelions in our lawn too. But we have like a sort of a pine woods kind of acidic soil, so we're getting stuff there. So I want to say a shout out to Mamo and Robin and Lucy down in Florida. Hey, Lucy. Hi, Francie.
Hey,
Okay.
Lucy's on.
Nasturtium. So nasturtium is interesting because they're bright orange, so you're going to get your carotenoids from your nasturtiums. And you can eat the leaves and the flowers. They're very peppery. They're surprised because they look like these pretty orange flowers, and then you eat them, you're like, whoa, they got a mustardy thing going on. And they go really great in salads. And so there are a lot of, again, they're going to have the carotenoids and antioxidants and anti-inflammatory effects. You can eat borage flowers. They're great. I love borage. My teacher, Jill Stansbury, taught me, I borage give always courage. Yes, because borage is a lovely calming flower, and the oil is full of gamma-linolenic acid. But you can pull borage flowers and you put them in their salad. They're very pretty. They look like a four-pointed star, and you can put them in your salad, and they're really lovely. As a flower essence, it works very nicely for courage. And the big thing, as I said, is the oil is the gamma-linolenic acid. Borage oil has been shown to help with mood disorders like depression and anxiety. You can eat them fresh in a salad as a garnish for desserts. You can even put them inside pasta. And you can even have borage altogether as a side dish. Very pretty. Purslane is a great weed to, and it's a, you can eat the flowers, of course, but you can eat the whole plant, and it's kind of like a succulent because it's got, it looks like a little bit like a, what you think of as a desert plant. And it's edible. So if you plant a garden, it will probably, like if you plant a garden and plant vegetables in it that you intend to eat, the purslane will probably show up and, it'll show up and volunteer itself as a weed, and you can eat it and put it in your salad. Very nutritious, and it has a lot of vitamins and minerals and antioxidants, and it also has a bunch of omega-3s. It has alpha-linolenic acid in it that you can eat as well. So, if you're lucky enough to have purslane growing in your garden, find out what it looks like and pick it and put it in your salad. It's really good. Roses. So there's like 150 species of roses, and we've got these wild roses growing, these briar roses
Boy, do we
growing.
have wild roses.
They're little white roses, and they smell so good. We can eat those roses too. We can do something with them. We can probably make a syrup out of it. The roses that we're seeing, they're white, and the flowers, when you pull the flowers off, you don't pull the whole flower off. You just pull off the petals, and the petals are little heart-shaped white petals. They're really lovely, and I have some rose oil going in my cabinet. I'm going to let it sit for 2 weeks, and I might go outside and get some more of those rose petals and make some rose water. Just put it in water and let it sit out in the sun. And I might also do an astringent. I'll get some witch hazel and put the roses in witch hazel, and that'll be very nice. Roses have lots of anti-anxiety. They have antioxidants in them, and they also have anti-anxiety benefits. And so I know that when I smell that rose scent, it calms me down. So like lavender, it has that calming effect. Roses and lavender are not in the same family. Lavender's in the mint family, and roses are in the rose family,
You
also
know,
known as
when the
rosaceae.
roses are all coming into full bloom, we should go to the rose garden in Norwich.
We could do that.
It smells like incredible when you go there. It's
that's
really,
nice.
Really nice. It's this big rose garden in Norwich, in Mohegan Park.
So you know when you eat squashes, you know how you like to eat squashes?
Yeah.
If you want, you could eat the you get the flower. The only thing is if
but
you eat the flower.
But then you don't have a squash.
Right. That's the problem.
That's the flower becomes the squash.
Yes, I know.
I don't want to do that.
Right.
I like the squash better than I do the flower.
But then the other side of that is when you grow zucchini, would you say that you get one or two zucchinis? Or?
That's true. If it's a zucchini, you could probably afford to eat a few of the flowers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Don't you? You know those signs out in front of people's houses with a
free zucchini.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Squash.
Please help me get rid of all this.
Squash and zucchini are in summer. Squash and zucchini are the gift that keeps on giving. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So it's like you said, you could probably afford to eat a few of the flowers. And so they're bright yellow. They have a long rounded bell shape and they can be eaten raw and chopped up in your salads. They're going to be nutritious for you as well. The female blossoms can turn to squash. Oh, so there's a way to figure out which are the male flowers and which are the female flowers. So you have to look that up because if you eat the male flowers, you don't have to worry about losing a squash.
Oh.
So just eat the male flowers. The male flowers have a long, thin stem and typically grow around the outer edges of the plant. So the female flowers glow closer to the plant's center and have a small bulbous fruit at the base. So if you see a fruit on it and you want it to turn into a zucchini, don't eat that flower.
Okay.
Yeah, to eat the male flowers. So I didn't realize there were male and female flowers on the zucchini.
Ah.
Yeah. And then the pansies. Pansies and Johnny Jump-Ups. They're really great. And, Johnny Jump-Ups are, I guess, related to violets. And they're just violets that are different colors.
Yeah.
But the
sometimes a little bit smaller than those.
And then pansies are bigger. And they're all edible. You can throw them in your salad. They make your salad really pretty. They're fresh and a little floral. They can have a lot of color variation. So they're very decorative. Then chamomile. You can eat chamomile flowers. And, chamomile is another nervine. It's very calming. Chamomile is protective for pain as well. Usually you drink chamomile as tea, but, you definitely can put them in your salad. There's a flower that's in here, that's not in here, that I love to eat and that you can eat too. And that's comfrey. And if you are fortunate enough to have comfrey plants, that's a great thing to eat too. And they're these beautiful little purple flowers and they're kind of sweet. When I go by the comfrey plants, I'll go pick off the flowers and just eat them. And I do that. I used to do that with borage as well. So, but comfrey, all of these flowers are going to have lovely antioxidants. They're colorful and they're going to be helpful for you. So I think next week we'll talk about why in general, flowers are good for your health.
You should eat more flowers.
Yeah.
And Lucy says that she breads them and eats them.
Which ones?
I think we're back
dandelions?
I think we're back in the daisies. Or not the daisies. The
dandelions.
No. Just recent. You were talking about pansies, I think.
Oh, pansies? Yeah. She breads and eats pansies? Maybe she means zucchini.
So. Or maybe it was zucchini flowers.
Yeah.
She can clarify that if she
all
wants.
All right.
Well, you'll get a comment here in a second. If she
okay.
Wants.
All right. So I'm going to go because it's time and I want to be outside and I want to do other things. So thank you so much for listening to me today. You've been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host Ron Meniza.
Hey.
You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. And big shout out to Julia and Jason for making that happen. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.